8:03, The Drive. Dave and Nate, Katie on vacation. She will be back Monday. Thanksgiving week, it's already freaking here. Ken Rudolph joins us at 8:35 for our daily news segment. Greg Papa in just a couple minutes. Mitch has been holding very patiently, as he does almost every day from New Jersey, and we really appreciate it. Mitch, welcome into the show.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Great. A couple of things. I mean, Tony Romo would have a job automatically if Sanchez was to pick him up or Trey. You won't have to give a number one pick. That way they can get the better quarterbacks that are coming out in 2018. Rosen, Browning, and I'm sure I'm forgetting a couple of other names. But definitely, that'd be a better move than what they have now. Too bad they couldn't do make this trade a month ago. And that's my positive of thoughts there. I'm sure you wouldn't mind having a positive callers if that doesn't offend anybody. And Carmelo, I wish he'd just keep quiet. He hasn't won anything for the Knicks. Now, you know I'm a Clipper fan, and I follow the Kings. But Carmelo, he just thinks he can talk like he's won so many championships.
Well, Mitch, hold on, dude. Now, it's one thing. Listen, everybody has a right to agree or disagree with anybody. I totally get that. I respect that. I really do. I don't know that I want to equate Carmelo's ability to speak or not speak on social issues based on how many championships he's won.
All right, that's true, because you see Kaepernick has to put in his 2 cents in, but he doesn't vote, though. I wish I didn't vote. I have a funny story, but I don't think it's the show for it. I wish I could have taken my vote. If they're not going to bring in good candidates, why bother voting? You can have my privilege.
Thank you for the call. O'Reilly Factor coming up next, right here at 9 o'clock. I don't know what to do with that.
This is the no-spin zone, Dave.
But seriously, to equate that, and by the way, Carmelo Anthony does have a ring. He got it at Syracuse. So remember that. As a freshman,
if I
remember.
He has one in New York.
Yes. Thank you very much. Greg Papa, I would imagine, you know, I'm going to ask him right now because Greg's with us. Greg Papa joins us as he does each week. Thanks to Jiffy Lube for bringing us Greg Papa. JiffyLubeCA.com for all your valuable coupons. Get out there today before the weather gets too cold. Greg, I know you're a pro. I know you do your job, whether the Raiders are 10-0 or 0-10. We ask Grant Napier this question sometimes because he does the Kings. These years are much more fun for you, are they not, or do you try to block that out?
Yeah, they're more fun, obviously.
Do we have
more...
Greg?
I agree.
Yeah. You got me?
There we go. I got you, Greg.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
How are you?
Hey, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, they're obviously more fun because there's more attention around the team. But really, whether you're talking to an audience of millions or one guy, you still do the same job. So you don't prepare any differently. You don't, when the ball goes up or the puck is dropped or whatever the sport, the ball's kicked off, the first pitch, whatever it is, you just, you got to do your job. So you don't really care that much about, you know, what the record is. But obviously, it's a lot more fun to be around guys that are winning. And mainly coaches, I think, really feel the pressure when a team is going the other way. And I have been very recently covering a team that was 0-10. We forget to see where the Raiders are now. Derek Carr's first 10 games in the NFL, he lost every single one. They didn't win a single game until that Thursday night monsoon game at home against Kansas City, which kind of flipped it around. And I remember people late that year saying to me, it would be better if the Raiders lost every game. And I'm like, what? Well, what are you talking about? Have you been around professional sports at all? No one wants to go through that agony and be like the Lions of a few years ago and go 0-16. It was ridiculous. I mean, people who were in sports for years, worked in the front offices, were saying that, and I just couldn't believe it. So when you look at it, the Raiders did go 3-3 those last six games, and last year got to 7, and now they got 7 already. So it doesn't much matter whether you're 0-10 versus 10-0, but obviously it's a lot more fun, and you're playing in playoff games. There's something to look at. But the game is the game. You got to do your job no matter what the score is or what the record is. And I think players have to approach each and every game the same way.
Greg, you kind of mentioned the specter of going winless and the Lions a couple of years ago. And having been around Hugh Jackson in his capacity with the Raiders, he's obviously having a tough time there. But Hugh Jackson has a lot of respect. Is there anything he can do to save that situation? And I guess is Hugh getting too much of the blame for just a bad spot?
No, when he took that job, we knew what he was walking into, and they lost a lot of people in free agency. Alex Mack, the great center, they lost the wide receiver, who I thought just, you know, was smoking weed, had a minor problem, but he just has not been able to come back at all. He was one of the top five, easily, wide receivers in pro football, Josh Gordon, when he was going right. So then the quarterback situation, the injuries in the quarterback room. Hugh is incredibly creative. In fact, I'm watching the Bengals play the Giants on Monday night, and they've taken what Hugh has done with that bunch formation with tackles detached, and they've taken it to a whole new level now where they're motioning out, coming back into a close formation. It was awesome to watch the complexity. But Hugh has always been a state-of-the-art play designer. I think he's among the very best. He's the first guy that I saw in the NFL use a pistol. When he was the Raider quarterback, he had Jason Campbell go into a sawed-off shotgun with Darren McFadden behind him. I'd never seen that before in the NFL. Now you see it just about every team runs a pistol. So, I mean, obviously Chris Ault in Nevada kind of invented that formation, but Hugh took it to the NFL. He's always been a very out-of-the-box play designer, play caller. He's a brilliant offensive mind. But he knew when he was hired there what the deal was. The question is that owner, Jimmy Haslam, Flying J, if he's going to stay patient, because he is just, I mean, he's thrown good football people out of the building there after an hour. So he's shown no ability to be patient. But when he went to this Moneyball kind of way to run the front office and brought Hugh in, it was a little out of the box. I think they kind of stripped it down, kind of like Reggie McKenzie did when Mark Davis first hired him. The first thing was just, burn, scorch the earth. Just burn everything down and then we'll come back. It's a little bit of what they had to do. It's hard to do it in the first year as a coach because your one loss record is on that. But I think they knew what they had to do, and it's going to be a slow build there. That's a very young, young football team with not a lot of great players. The left tackle's a good player. The cornerback, I thought, was a good player, but I'm not sure about Joe Hayden. There were a lot of rumors about him getting traded around the deadline. But no, you knew what he was getting into, and they'd be foolish to fire that guy. I think he'll have at least 3 years. May should be more after what they've had. I mean, this year you almost have to just say it didn't count because you scorched the earth. And yep, it's going to take 3 years from this point forward, at least, maybe five.
Greg Papa with us. You get the bye week coming off the biggest win in, hell, a decade almost for the Raiders. And now you go Monday Night Football, Mexico City. This is an interesting game, Greg, and I think the obvious thing to say would be it's a trap game coming off of Denver, coming off a bye week. But, man, it really seems like Jack Del Rio has been screaming that at everybody. They've been doing self-scouting, and he's doing everything he can to make sure these guys aren't getting too big for their britches.
Oh, this is not a trap game. Houston's a good team. I mean, their defensive front, and they don't have J.J. Watt in that front, is really formidable. And the quarterback is a guy we know well. He's capable of making very good plays. He's also, you know, he's big. He's got big feet. He's a little clumsy at times. He's not quite ready. Why they gave him $72 million is just, again, the owner stepping in there when he shouldn't have done it. But they're a solid team right now, and they got a very comparable record. Again, if the Raiders don't win the AFC West, this game against Houston is going to be pivotal. If the Raiders lose this game and the Texans win, they're going to go ahead of the Raiders in the standings in the AFC, and they're going to have the head-to-head if it ends in a head-to-head situation. Now, they may wind up winning their division, which wouldn't be as big of a deal, but this is going to be a tough game. And the elements of going to Mexico City, it's going to be challenging. Now, the difference about going to Denver, when you go to Denver, the Broncos live there, so they take advantage, like all the teams in Denver, whether it's the Avalanche, the Rockies, the Nuggets, or the Broncos, they take advantage of living in the altitude where neither one of these teams, and I was talking to the radio voice of the Texans yesterday. I was on with their radio network yesterday. They're flying in late like the Raiders are. There's two theories about going to the elevation, and the elevation of Mexico City is substantially higher than Denver. Denver's a mile high. Mexico City is 7,400 feet, so from 5,200, 5,280, up to 7,400 is a dramatic difference. There's two theories there. You either get there as soon as you can and try to live in it and have your body acclimate to it, which, I mean, there's two ways to do this international series. And the Raiders played in London. Of course, they went right there from Boston, but they played the Patriots the week before. They're not going to go to Mexico City like today or Monday and get ready, especially when they just spent a week in Florida. So their theory is to fly in as late as possible. And it's a long flight to Mexico City. You know, it's way south of Texas. It's way down there. So it's far. You know, it's a good 5-6 hour flight going there. The theory being is to get there as late as possible. They're going to have a walkthrough at the stadium on Sunday, and then it's a night game, so you're going to be there all day Monday. But just go out and play. And there, you know, there's two theories. One is get there as soon as you can, have your body acclimate, and one, and get there as late as possible and don't have your body get sluggish. But it's going to be a bit of a story, I think, early in the game. The Raiders have been preparing for it for weeks, months, wearing these funky kind of oxygen masks when they've been running on the treadmill to build their lungs up to elevation to try to get their body acclimated, even, you know, weeks before they went there. So the one major element of this is that the Texans don't live there, so they don't have the advantage of playing in the altitude. It's going to be something that both teams are going to have to figure out on game day.
Greg Papa with us on KHTK. To kind of follow up on that, what do you see as the best way for the Raiders offense to attack the Texans defense, and is that affected at all knowing that both of those teams have to deal with the altitude?
I'm not sure yet. I just got into looking at Houston. They got a mean front. Vince Wilfork, the nose tackle, is there. Clowney's playing really well. Merciless, the Sam linebacker, is a tremendous edge rusher. Their corners are pretty good players. Jonathan Joseph has been a good player for a long time. Kareem Jackson's been in the league for a long time. The nickel corner, I saw the Monday night game they played a few weeks ago against Denver. A.J. Bouye had a tremendous game. So I'm not sure exactly how you want to go at it, if you want to run at this front or if you want to throw on them. I think they're figuring all that out now. But the one thing I would say, that Denver game really opened my eyes, and I think the whole league, to what the Raiders can truly be. I mean, to be and Denver's not a great run defense, but they got some big boys on that front that you do have to deal with. But to be able to just run power at them the whole game and to get behind that left guard, Kelechi Osemele, who I think is the most Amari's not getting talked about enough, the quarterback, because you're all watching the ball. The quarterback gets all of the – he gets all the praise. He gets all the criticism when they lose. You know, they make way too much money. They're just the way the position mandates, and you got to have a good one, and Derek's playing great. But Amari is such a great player. The separation that he creates from his footwork is just incredible. And then Kelechi Osemele is just a monster, an absolute monster. And they're running behind the left side of the line. They're going jumbo that way. And when you get late in the year, whether it's going to Foxborough to play a playoff game, wherever you have to go, you want to be able to run the ball. And the Raiders ran the ball on that Sunday nighter against Denver in their last game. They ran it when the Broncos knew it was coming. They couldn't stop it. And could you imagine now having that kind of running game, and then Derek can play action off of that, and now let Amari go and let Crabtree go and maybe get the tight end going a little bit more, Michael Rivera. Get the running game to set it up where the running game is the staple of your offense, then the play action off of that. Now you're talking about a scary offensive animal. So I think I just want to see the run game follow up what they did against Denver. I don't care what front the other team has, whether it's Vince Wilfork on the nose or not. If they can run the ball like this, then like they did, then this team, who knows how far. They could go all the way to Houston and Super Bowl 51. If they're able to get that running game going with the passing game now and not having it vice versa, now you're talking about a scary offensive animal.
Yeah, I mean, even without, you know, some, if God forbid for some reason the passing game falters, I mean, isn't that the mark of a serious late in the season contender, Greg, when you can essentially broadcast, hey, we're going to run the football, stop it, see what you can do?
Well, that's the way to beat Denver. I still think the passing game was okay against the Broncos. It was not great, and Tlaib didn't play in that game. They picked on Bradley Roby's inability to tackle, and they picked on T.J. Ward covering tight ends, but it wasn't great. It was just okay, and that's the one team the Raiders have had a hard time throwing the ball on, and Tlaib, when he gets back, it's going to change everything. Everybody goes back into their roles. So, but if you can run it like that on them again, and Brandon Marshall left early in the game with a hammy again, but he's not a great run player. You could still run at him. You can run at Vaughn Miller. So, yes, again, it's one game, but when you see a running game like that and the way they were able to just move the offensive line, was able to move their defensive front back and then run behind it, I mean, that's what we're talking about here. That's Art Shell and Gene Upshaw and Jim Otto on the left side of the line during the 17 Bob Treo era of Raider football when you couldn't stop him. Pan is not a great run blocker. He's a really good pass blocker. Kelechi can do both, and you got Rodney Hudson. He's just so smart. And then you go to this jumbo package where you're bringing in the extra lineman, Denver Kirkland. So, again, it's just, you know, it was really impressive to me how they were able to run the ball, and that'll make it a whole lot easier for Derek Carr and the offense to light people up on the proper down and distance and not, you know that they're going to have to do it. Just be able to do it off the running game could make this offense really state-of-the-art, one of the best offenses in football.
So especially against Houston, which you know has been a little easier to run against than pass against, at least that's what the stats say.
Stats lie. They're for losers. You have to look at every game. I mean, you got to get Vince Wilfork blocked.
Sure.
And Brian Cushing is behind him. I think their corners. Joseph looks like he's a every now and then tackler. I think you can make him tackle in space. So I don't know. I mean, with the Raider passing game, you're not scared of Jonathan Joseph and Kareem Jackson. You can throw on this team if you had to. But if you can run it on this team and get the linebackers to bite up, now you can get behind them. So. We'll see. I mean, again, stats are predicated, especially in football, on just game and situation, and the quarterback throws a pick, and you're behind more, and teams are running more. I look at Vince Wilfork still, and that guy is just a monster of a man. And when you build a 3-4 defense, you want a good nose tackle, and you want edge rushers. And even without J.J. Watt, they got Wolfert, they got Clowney, they got Merciless. So that's a very good front.
Well, and to your point, they're 26 against the run. They're third against the pass, but you had Allen Robinson go for a buck 07 and a touchdown last week. So, yeah, there's exceptions in matchups. I'm guessing, though, like you just said, you want the Raiders to run the ball not just to free everything else up, but it might be a little softer there. Either way, being in Mexico City, they're going to have to go a little bit deep, I would imagine, on the depth chart there and be bringing guys in and out.
Well, they do anyway. I mean, you mean Houston's front as far as – I mean, both teams are going to rotate. You don't defensive lines, they're in and out. I mean, that's the one thing is that offensive lines in football do not rotate. You may bring in a sixth lineman, but defensive fronts rotate all the time. They bring in, you know, a base defense with big guys, then they bring in their nickel edge rushers. I've always wondered why you don't rotate the offensive linemen to match up, where when it's first and 10 and you're going to more of a power formation, you would use a power offensive line. And then when you get into second and third down and you know you're going to throw the ball, why wouldn't you sub out and bring in tackles that are great athletes, guys with great feet, kind of like Eugene Monroe. Remember when he was drafted years ago by Jacksonville, went to Baltimore. He's not a good run player, but he's a dancer. So it's always been the next evolution of pro football for me would be to sub out the offensive linemen. And everything is predicated in down and distance, and defenses change dramatically. 5-6 guys come off the field, in and out, based on a base defense versus a sub package, a nickel or a dime or some exotic defense they have. Why does the offensive line ever sub out? Is always the interesting. Now, the thing is, you would be tipping if you bring in, you know, more of a dancer, a tackle, but you could still run draws, and you do that anyway by your formations when you go to 4 and 5 wide or bring in the two young backs to. You know, and they run out of the gun. So, and why wouldn't, when you go empty, isn't that pretty much a tip off? You're not going to run the ball unless the quarterback's going to run it. You have nobody in the backfield. So the evolution of the next step for me in football would be subbing out the offensive line. Maybe not the interior of the offensive line, but certainly I think you can bring in tackles that are more run blockers in the early downs and pass blockers in the later downs. But as you were saying, as far as subbing out, I mean, the Raiders are as deep as you can be. They have all these different running backs. They use 5 different wide receivers now. They have this Cinco package where they have no running backs, no tight ends on the field. All 5 eligibles are wide receivers, not just tight ends that are flexed out, but they use all the wide receivers. So the Raiders can rotate people as well as anybody, certainly on offense, and obviously every team in football can do it on defense. But that'll be more of a story, I think, as we, at least the first quarter on Monday night, is that because of the elevation, like when you play a basketball game in Denver, you typically sub out a lot earlier against the Nuggets than you do in a regular game. So I think you'll see a little bit of that where you're rotating. Even Amari Cooper may get snaps off early in the game just to rotate and keep his lungs fresh and not burning early in the game.
Greg, was there a specific point of emphasis for the Raiders in their off week?
You know, I haven't been around them for a while, so I don't know. The one thing I would look at and I think I brought this up to you last week, is T.J. Carey is playing really well. And I like D.J. and T.J. and Amerson. And, you know, Sean Smith's making a lot of money, and I have to think he will play, but he's going to have to play better because T.J. was just – I mean, if you go back and watch the Denver game, he would jump – Demaryius Thomas's slant, where he knew Thomas was going to run a slant, and he just jumped inside on him. He got his feet in, and he just sealed him off. And Thomas was not smart enough to say, oh, he's taking the slant away. I'll go outside and run a vertical or an out. He's given me that. He would stubbornly just try to get inside, and he would take it away. And a couple routes, he just stopped. He didn't even run. He just said, oh, I'm supposed to run a slant here. He took it away. But it was T.J. Carey was well prepared for the game. A little chancy to jump that far inside. I think they had a safety behind him. But I like the way T.J. played in that game. D.J. played well. So what do you do with Sean Smith now? How do you reintegrate him in? Do you just throw him back in there again? You know, Hopkins, this one receiver that they have, DeAndre Hopkins, is really long and fast. I'd like to see David Amerson follow him around the way he did Mike Evans in Tampa. I think that'd be a good matchup. But then Will Fuller, their rookie, drops a lot of balls, but he's fast, really fast. That could be a tough matchup for Sean. So what do you do with the secondary? Do you let T.J. Carey play and just kind of ease Sean in, or do you just, you know, not play Sean Smith for a little while because he has not been playing well? He's had some weeks better than others, but overall teams attack him. And then in the front, you know, Aldon Smith's going to get a call from the league here like tomorrow. Whether he gets a call or they don't call him, but there's supposed to be some resolution to him being reinstated on the 17th. So it may happen as early as tomorrow. The commissioner may drag it out. But if you get Aldon Smith back and he's good to go, get him up and running and get Mario Edwards Jr. back from this hip injury up and running. And now you can move Bruce Irvin around in your front. You can play with it a little bit. Could you imagine having a four-man pass rush with Khalil Mack, Aldon Smith, Mario Edwards Jr., and Bruce Irvin? I mean, you could line up two of those guys. It'd be inside over guards. And it would be, to me, Mario Edwards Jr. And I've always wanted Khalil to be inside over a guard. He would just dominate inside. I want him closer to the quarterback. He's not a speed guy. To me, he's more of a power guy. I want him as close to the quarterback in the A and B gap as you can. So you could put Aldon on one side, Irvin on, you can move him around. So if they, and it may not happen this game right away because, you know, the commissioner may not reinstate Aldon right away. And Mario's coming back from a severe injury. Even if he does come back in this game, probably won't be a lot of snaps. You may just mix him in. But as you start to get later in the year and you get into December and those AFC West games at Kansas City, at San Diego, at Denver in December and January, boy, you'd love to have 99 and 97 up and going again. And then you're talking about a whole different defense if you get those two guys back.
We are always, man, it flies by. We are completely out of time. We always appreciate your time, though, Greg. And
I think I'm going to put on an oxygen mask to get ready for Mexico. We were there in a preseason game many years ago to play the Cowboys, and it's just such a trip to go there. And I remember there being a huge moat around the stadium, and it's just the security of it. But it's going to be a real game. It's going to be a Monday night football game, so it's going to be fun.
Shorten those touchdown Raiders. Keep the voice, keep the breath, Greg.
You think so? I'm going to have to shorten them. Touchdown Raiders. My lungs are burning.
We'll see you next week. Have a safe flight.
All right, guys.
Bye. That's Greg Papa. We're late for a break. We'll come back. Ken Rudolph joining us with today's news. Don't go away on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK. All right, 8:50. Janet King Commercial Cleaning has your franchise waiting. It's waiting right now for you. Don't be rude.
Go get it, Seattle.
Get it. 916-364-9800. Let's try this one more time here. It's Dave and Nate. Katie is on vacation, though you can check her out this evening. Doing the old sideline reporting. Of course, pregame 6:30 tip-off. Excuse me, pregame 7. I'm still on last year tip-off.
Half-ass on her vacation.
Right? I mean, come on. I don't care if it's you.
She didn't half-ass anything.
No. There's no, I don't think you mean anything by that, right?
No, saying, I mean, yeah. I'm being serious. Yeah. Like, she overstudies almost everything.
Ask her if she owns any Shondoms.
Somebody on the
call has been forwarded.
Oh, no, hold on. What? She straight up ignored that call.
She threw us to voicemail.
Mm-hmm. Nonsense.
From the 916, Dave, there's a product called Cleat Skins that fit over sports shoes. Works great for my golf shoes. Cleat Skins, sort of an offensive name there, exactly. I don't know if the NFL will continue to allow that.
Cleat Blakeman's offended.
My goodness gracious. All right, let's get to some sound here real quick.
Cletus T. Judd, also not a fan of that.
Wrap it up. Floyd Mayweather, it continues to be rumored as an opponent for Conor McGregor. I don't understand
Wait,
this.
Who?
Floyd Mayweather.
All right.
Well, excuse me, Floyd Mayweather Jr., just to be clear.
Yeah.
I don't get this. I have no comprehension of why this would be a big deal other than...
You'd watch it, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Come on.
I would. But it's like watching a car crash. It's a pretty simple thing for me. If they box, Conor McGregor will get annihilated. If they do a sanctioned MMA bout, Floyd would probably get annihilated even more than if it was a boxing match on Conor's side. I don't know.
It's like taking a cricket player and a baseball player. Yeah, they both got bats. They both got to hit the ball when it's thrown at them. They both got a field run, jump, all that stuff. You're talking about two completely different sports.
Yeah. So, exactly. People are comparing the two of them as far as talking garbage and promoting fights and all that. Here's what Floyd had to say. Elephant don't beef with ants, Nate.
I mean, that's a pretty good little saying there, but I mean, to be fair, to my knowledge, granted there might be proof of this somewhere, but to my knowledge, Conor McGregor not only is not a woman beater, but he also can read.
Well, there's that. I think both of those are accurate. What does beef with an ant? We'll get to that later. Here's more of Floyd on Conor.
A magnifying glass.
Okay. I mean, he has good points on most of that.
Sure.
I don't get it. Other than, hey, let's just make some money. People will watch. Let's make some money.
I think Conor McGregor is more popular than Floyd Mayweather.
I agree
right
with you.
Now,
right
as
now,
as we speak.
I agree with you right now.
It's probably going to be that way for a while.
I don't know if it won't be that way. I mean, well, yeah. I mean,
barring a... Now I can't think of it. Or a Ronda Rousey type meltdown.
Sure.
I mean, just get your ass beat and then quit.
Sure.
Then this... Conor McGregor's not going away. He's bigger than you, Floyd. And believe it or not... Somehow, he's more likable.
Yes, he is. He is absolutely
more
likable.
Which I guess it's not a mystery when it's not public knowledge that you beat women.
No,
but,
no.
I hate to harp on a same thing there, but...
By countering that, Conor McGregor has been with the same girl for 8 years. They're about to have a kid, and she helped support him when they were taking welfare checks in Ireland because he was busy training for the gym. I mean, they actually have a very, very good story. Finally, Floyd Mayweather here being humble. About a Floyd Mayweather Conor McGregor fight, honest to God, would be everything before the fight. It would be the press tour, the press conferences, the lead up. But my goodness, you're stepping into the ring with arguably the greatest fighter of all time. I don't believe that. But you can make you certainly can make an argument that Floyd Mayweather's the best ever at what he does, and you're asking Conor McGregor to go in there basically, literally, not literally, but basically, with one hand tied behind his back when it comes to his skill set. He's a great stand-up fighter. Conor is. He has hand speed and angles that are insane in the world of mixed martial arts. We're talking about Floyd Mayweather, and we're talking about boxing here. That's just stupid.
Hey, first off, do you think that Floyd Mayweather would ever say, yeah, I'd box Conor McGregor and I'd beat his ass? Do you think he would ever say that, honestly?
I think once the deal was signed.
Okay, but like right now what you're getting is, don't talk to me about Conor McGregor. He's nothing. He's an ant. I'm an elephant. All that.
Yeah.
Okay, and my point there is, do you think that Conor McGregor would say, yeah, I'll box Floyd Mayweather and I'll beat his ass?
I think if the money was there, Conor would, yeah. I think they both would if the money was there.
No. I'm not talking about like, hey, if the deal's there, would they sign it? I'm talking about publicly right now with no deal on the table. Who says no to that first?
Well, I certainly don't think Conor McGregor would say, I'll box Floyd Mayweather and do my best. I think he'd say publicly he'd beat his ass. I don't think he'd believe it.
That's fine, but my point is, like, why isn't Floyd just say, let him box me? I'm the best. Let him do it. I'll beat his ass. And the other question, though, would be, like, how much training do you think it would honestly take Conor McGregor to not have UFC fighting be his reaction. You know what I mean? You get punched in the face, you take a combo a couple times,
sure,
and you want to counter with a kick.
Sure.
I'm not like, he's been doing that for years, and it's reaction,
yeah,
at this point. That's his instinct. How long do you have to train to change that instinct?
I think that would be fairly, not, I won't say easy, but I could see him adjusting to that. That almost like, I, honestly, Nate, I would compare it to, you and I both have potty mouths. When we get on the radio,
that's
we
true.
Don't swear. I think it's just one of those instincts. But I would say it would take him about 10 years in a time machine to go back and do nothing but box to not embarrass himself in the ring with Floyd Mayweather. That's it. Katie is gone, so no thanks to her, but Matt George did a bang-up. Matt George was adequate today. Kevin Sherris did an amazing job today, by the way. Nate Goodyear, myself, well, we'll try harder tomorrow. Lowdown coming up at noon. Jim Rome is next. Check out Matt's article on DeMarcus Cousins, cowbellkingdom.com. We'll give you a plug there. It came out yesterday. I read it last night. I read all your stuff, Matt.
Plug.
We'll see you tomorrow, 6 a.m. on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK.